Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, today's broadcast, lesson number 6 of week number 19, studying Matthew chapter 19, part of a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5-year long study of the New Testament. As we get started, these reminders. For our study materials, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. For a list of those materials, email us at free@ighradio.com. For text updates, text IGHFREE to 55222. That's text IGHFREE to 55222. For free Bible courses online, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. For free Bible courses by mail, call us toll-free at 1-855-IGH-6988 or use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com. Let's get back into our study of Matthew chapter 19. We take up where we left off discussing Matthew 19, verse 5 and verse 6. Note this, in those two verses, 19:5 and 19:6 of Matthew, there are at least 5 express statements that emphasize God's intended permanent union of man and woman. The permanency of that union must be understood in at least the following ways from this passage. First, in Matthew 19:5, we see that God made male and female, that God purposed them for each other, and that God joined them together, specifically to become one flesh. That's all rooted, all grounded in the Genesis account, chapter 2, the closing verses. Second, that Jesus repeated that passage here, demonstrated that what God originated in Genesis was still in effect. And then third, in Matthew 19:6, Jesus, not citing Genesis, but giving his own imprimatur in effect as the divine Son of God, both reiterated and reinforced the principles first found in Genesis. Jesus provided then, not commentary, but a divine restatement of God's will in Genesis, thus emphasizing again, this time from his own mouth, God's original intent. Jesus' purpose in this context was to teach the truth about God's original intention, and not to prove that he was equal with the Father. But in the manner he stated it, he proved his equality with God anyway. Though there's much more that could be said about this text, note the mandates, one positive and one negative, that appear at the end of Matthew 19:6. First, consider what God has joined together. The word translated as joined together means to make a pair. Joined together, pair. Though the word's root, meaning yoke, appears 15 times in 7 different forms in the Second Covenant, this particular form appears only twice in the New Testament, once here, and then the second time in Mark chapter 10, verse 9, Mark's parallel account. It appears, Robertson notes, as a timeless aorist indicative, thus meaning true always. The point, God ordained the marriage union. And then second, think about the words, let not man separate. The word separate can mean to pull two things apart, thus creating space between them. But it can also mean to separate by departing from someone. Like the previous expression, joined together, it appears in the same context of Matthew 19 and Mark 10. Though it does not always appear in a marriage context, it does appear 4 more times in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 10 through 15, another marriage context. It's important to note that the term in this passage was a command. Jesus, after noting that God joined together, he commanded man not to separate. If Jesus' hearers, the Pharisees, if they read God's word, and if they read it responsibly, they would have known what God thought, and thus what God taught. And hopefully, they would be living consistently with God's expectations. Jesus concluded this part of his answer with this proscription, "Do not change what God has done." 2 more thoughts before moving forward. What God revealed in Genesis 2 could not be missed. First, just how far do you have to read in Genesis to get to God's will about marriage at the end of the second chapter? Not very far at all. How long would it take to get there? Reading speeds vary, of course, but the average reader would get to those pivotal verses in Genesis within a matter of minutes. There was no excuse that could be given that exempted the Pharisees from knowing what that passage said. Second, there's a principle at stake here that applies to marriage, of course, but a principle that also applies to everything that God reveals. What God reveals first about key matters will, more often than not, never be rescinded, never changed, never superseded. Why was it that Paul was so concerned about the Galatian church's new gospel? Paul marveled to see just how quickly they moved away from the truth that they were initially taught. Paul, an inspired apostle, taught them the truth up front. And that truth was not going to change. There was one gospel. And what you are teaching now, it's not the gospel. In like fashion, Jesus was arguing this. There was one truth about marriage. And what you are teaching now, it's not that truth. In Matthew 19:7, we note the Pharisees' follow-up question. What about Moses? Remember, the Pharisees' divorce question had a history and an agenda behind it. Jesus' first response, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning, that did not derail that agenda? So, after Jesus responded to their first question, the Pharisees had another question in mind. They were still testing Jesus. Though Jesus introduced the at the beginning principle, they wanted to know this. If that principle were true, and if that principle were always applicable, then why did Moses command a certificate of divorce? Did Moses' certificate sanction divorce in all cases for just any reason? And what did it mean in view of God's original Genesis chapter 2 proclamation? In Matthew 19, verses 8 and 9, we see Jesus' second answer, given in response to the Pharisees' follow-up question. Jesus' response here includes a repetition of the principle proffered in his first response, but it also tells us why Moses commanded the certificate of divorce in the first place. There was a stated reason and a larger context behind Moses' decree, and that reason and that context made all the difference in understanding why Moses did what he did. And it made all the difference in understanding that what Moses did in issuing the divorce decree did not alter, did not fundamentally change what God decreed to be true from the beginning, Genesis 2. The first thing Jesus said in his second reply was this, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. We have already seen Jesus appeal to the at-the-beginning principle in Matthew 19, verse 4. We see it again, 4 verses later, in 19:8. And we have already explained that God's initial marriage intent had not changed since it was first expressed at the beginning, Genesis 2. If that's true, and it was, then there must be some reason why Moses did what he did. And that reason puts Moses' divorce decree in context. What was that reason? Jesus tells us at the very beginning of the statement that we cited, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts. That expression, hardness of your hearts, was not at all a term of endearment. Indeed, it was a term that expressed a high level of concern for Israel's spiritual condition. Perhaps you are familiar with the word sclerodoma. In contemporary use, the word refers to a chronic hardening and contraction of the skin and connective tissue, either locally or throughout the body. Our present-day word, actually a transliteration of the original Greek term that appears in this passage, focuses on a physical condition of the body. That term, as it appears in Matthew 19:8, however, refers to a spiritual condition of the soul. Bauer defines it as an unyielding frame of mind, hardness of heart, coldness, obstinacy, stubbornness. Lewin Nida note that it was pertaining to being obdurate and obstinate, stubborn, completely unyielding. They note that in the context, the focus of the stubborn and obstinacy is the unwillingness to be taught or to understand. Though the root word for hard or hardness appears 16 times in the New Covenant, this particular form appears only 3 times, here in Matthew 19, in Mark's parallel account, Mark 10:5, and then in Mark 16:14. In that last account, in one of Jesus' post-resurrection appearances, we read this: "Later he appeared to the 11 as they sat at the table, and he rebuked their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they did not believe those who had seen him after he had risen." The apostles in this context, Mark chapter 16, twice refused to believe eyewitness testimony from eyewitnesses that they knew quite well, that Jesus had risen from the grave. They did not believe Mary Magdalene, who saw the resurrected Jesus and then told them that she had done so, Mark 16, verse 11. And they did not believe the 2 men who saw him en route to Emmaus either, Mark 16, verse 13. Thus, when Jesus appeared to them, he noted their failure to believe, twice, in fact, and also stated the cause of their unbelief. They had hardness of heart. Jesus' point here, Matthew chapter 19, reflecting on why God allowed Moses' certificate of divorce, was this: your fathers' hearts were hardened. Your fathers refused to listen, and your fathers refused to do what God wanted them to do. Of course, in the context of Jesus' ministry, the Pharisees themselves repeatedly demonstrated this same trait. They refused to listen. Thus, they could not be taught. Genesis chapter 2 did not set forth all of the implications, all of the consequences of God's two become one forever plan for marriage. But Jesus, who just gave his own divine interpretation in Matthew 19:6 of what God said in Genesis 2 and that Jesus himself restated in 19:5, Jesus addressed those consequences of God's original marriage intentions. If someone divorces his wife and then subsequently remarries for reasons other than sexual immorality, that is, fornication, then that person commits adultery. Furthermore, whoever marries the divorced woman also commits adultery. These consequences were true in Genesis chapter 2, and they were still true in Deuteronomy 24, and they are still true today. As we close, these reminders. To begin a free, self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.